Star the mooning sly in the fading blush sky. A moth sent from some quietly seething planetary god flits around the bulb of our beginnings, and this wheel of spooks starts spinning once more just for you. You who are the gristle left at the side of the plate after breakfast. Yes, you, the dog-do crusting in the liberal tread of yesteryear's running shoes, and you, the experiment in home cooking that even the flies won't touch. For all of you, the gloop that reality has puked up after a night of serious binging, are the dummies of the damned, who suck on you to stop their screaming. So greetings, dear listeners, what treats do I, Dr. DMB, verified deceased and reaper of the airwaves, have for you on this glorious patch of time? So clench your teeth, furrow your brows, get snug in your bug-infested beds, and let me bring you advice from the afterlife. These are the top three things I wish I'd known before moving here. Number one, dress for eternity. You see those gross bonfire effigies made up to look like your own family from a previous decade? There's the pretend you in your turquoise shell suit from your youth. The cheapness of your clothes is shocking, though to buy them again 40 years later was wincingly expensive. The whole family dressed and posed in imitation of a family holiday photo circa 1989 will go up in flames with a single match strike when the time comes. To your surprise, people are making genuinely positive comments about the clothes that the effigies are wearing, with a few people actually offering you money. More than you even bought these vintage pieces for, which makes you second-guess your decision to offer this memory up as a sacrifice, and you almost pull the plug on the whole spectacle. But then, as you make your assessment of the value of these pieces that also once meant so much to you, causing a flutter of that youthful heart, or is it a wince? You notice that one of the effigies is handing you a sparkler. This is the effigy of your sister who asks your effigy if you have the lighter. You notice your hand moving into your shell suit pocket, brushing against the soft cotton lining and pausing there for a moment to enjoy the sensation. You light the sparklers. Your sister's brothers, mothers and fathers before your own. The onlookers are well lit with intent gazes, and a real mix of emotions are animating their faces, which makes them seem more human than human. When you compare this overflow of feeling to the everyday faces that populate your world, eyes to the ground and fearful of the consequences that any contact might have, you look again across this sea of emotion and notice that their faces have become uniform, that they are all looking in your direction and expressing the same thing. Horror. You look to the effigy of your brother on your left to ask him if he has noticed the same thing when you realize that he and the rest of your family effigies are on fire already. Didn't you all agree that it was you who would light the long chef's match that you had brought along for the ceremonial drama of cooking your own family? Never mind who lit the match. The fact is that the effigies are now on fire, burning behind individual walls of flame, their hair burning like real hair, their screams sounding like real screams. The onlookers are holding their noses and covering their mouths and taking out their phones to video the horrible scene that will be watched by over 4 million viewers by the time the sun has risen. And then you realize from the charcoal black recesses of your memory through the burst eyeballs and eardrums that these are no effigies, that you had, in fact, decided to not make effigies of your family, but instead to go to the event in fancy dress. That the pathetic sparkler you had waved with such despondency when it failed to recreate any feeling of magic now held in your 48-year-old child hand had been the catalyst in this unspeakable tragedy. That you were the one who had pushed for the very funny idea of dressing up in this highly flammable fashion at the most fire-friendly event of the year, even though your siblings had expressed discomfort at how potentially hazardous it would be. Now, that you reflect from the vantage point of eternity, was it a good choice? Yes, it's true. As you may have heard, there ain't no changing room here, baby. You live in what you died in, and that's that. So the bottom line is, wear what you would be willing to die in. There's a little phrase that rings so true to my deaf ears now, and that is, I wouldn't be seen dead in that. And I tell you now, there isn't a more pertinent phrase around. Live by this phrase, make it your mantra, and live every day as if it were eternity, because one day eternity is going to bite you on your tootsie. So you had better be ready and looking like you mean it. Number 2. Flaunt it now, for nothing gets better, ever. You sad stammerers on the congested B roads to hell, don't look so glum, I bring you good tidings. This is good news. Once you realize there is no peace, no eternal happiness, no great silence, no unending darkness. Once you've got this clear in your little brain pustules, then you can start to enjoy all that you have now. Toil, agitation, unease everlasting. I know you. I see you. As you all become uglier, stupider, more flaccid in your moral dimensions, you start clinging harder and harder to the safety vest as if it could ever fit on your adult-sized body, let alone keep you afloat with all those weights tied to your legs. And despite this, you keep your head turned backwards, slipping out a moan of regret every time you get a good view of your past self. This moan turns into a broader, open-chested bemoaning that will eventually reduce you to nothing but that moan, airy and more inflatable than that life jacket. We once had a hand held out to greet the new and the unfamiliar, but now that hand is only used to slap down the despair at every waking moment, causing that hand to horribly seize up and be unfit for any other purpose. Once a beautiful hand, once a handsome hand, once a hand that could make an instrument sing. Why look back when you know you are always being chased? Keep your eyes ahead. You know from experience that tomorrow will be worse than today, so live with the arrogance of that knowledge. See the whimpering glob of a person that the future will sneeze you out as, and gloat over that pathetic phlegm of a person you are yet to be reduced to. Spank yourself into shape now, sir. Madam, every moment of joy is worth a gram of gold in the afterlife, and prices keep rising. Number 3. Never say boo to a book. If I follow a thought, I usually find it drinking in a bar at lunchtime. I'll have to lift its glass to its mouth because it has weak arms or no arms, and then order a drink for myself. And we sit at the back of the bar where the barman recounts tales of customers famous and infamous. He sounds all buddy-buddy with them, and you think that he is either trying to convert you to something or give you a good dose of fear to keep you in check. When is the point when you say enough? Stop. This must end now. There is the feeling that accompanies these days and nights, blurry with booze and trying to keep up with your thoughts, that it cannot continue as it is. Yet the expression is not strong enough, or the instructions not clear enough. For the dogs keep howling at the postman, and the letters are never delivered. So I can't say it enough. Read, 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 read. Do you know what life is like without books? With no thoughts but your own, no inner spaces to traverse, no people to talk to but your neighbours or your work colleagues? Life can be a living hell when you're pressed up against the limits of circumstance. The soul is a real leech. You need to supply it with enough blood to keep it going for eternity, and books are the only way to give you the sustenance to survive death. Just think, where do ghosts go on their day off, on that one day when the doors are flung open? They go to the library. Where else? They read over the shoulders of snoozing students. They peek under the sheets of wriggling bookworms to get as much sustenance as they can for the coming year. They reconvene on All Hallows Day with the urgency of the incontinent to share the treats, to binge on the remnants of books that they memorize before it spoils. But if you read in life, if you already have enough books in your head before you're dead, you'll reap the benefits. Fill yourself with stories. Read until you become the characters. Walk in their shoes. Do your laundry in their basements. Write your name in the steam of their bathroom mirrors. That's all I have to say about it. Read before it's too late.